right, we're going to call the meeting to order. Wendy, how about a flag salute?
All righty.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain.
Let's pray together. Father, we gather here today because there's business to be conducted on behalf of our county. We're truly grateful for those who serve in every position. For the meeting today, whatever is on the agenda, we pray for lively discussion. We pray for good results. We pray for a spirit of working together to accomplish what needs to be done for the citizens of our county. And all these things, we're truly grateful that you provide for us. And it is the season when we begin to think about others. May that be part of our role today. And we give you thanks for all things. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Let's see. First off, the board will be convening today as the Siskiyou County Flood Control and Water Conservation District and County Service Area 4. And receives no additional compensation. Let's do a roll call. Got Supervisor Howe?
Present.
Supervisor Cobbs?
Here.
Supervisor Chris?
Present.
Supervisor Ogren?
Present.
And Supervisor Gonzuela?
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
All right, this is time for presentations from the public. This time slots for information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You'll be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record. To provide your comments, please address the board as a whole through the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. Ms. Nielsen, you're up first.
Thank you. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. I just wanted to provide the board with an update. In November, there was a full suppression resolution presented to the board. At that time, the board requested that the item be continued and be brought back to the board on December 5th. Obviously, the resolution is not in front of the board right now, and I just wanted to inform the board that we are currently working with the entities that the board requested staff work with to revise the resolution. However, in light of the holidays and just the magnitude of that resolution, it was not able to be brought back on December 5th. We will potentially be bringing something back at a later date, and I will continue to keep the board updated on that. But just wanted to provide an update as it was directed to bring something back on December 5th, and I wanted to inform the board as to why there is nothing on the agenda right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else in-house? Anna?
Showing them online.
Okay, we're going to move on to item 5, consent agenda. We are going to pull 5E, and that will be dropped, I believe.
Correct.
Okay. Let's see. To pull item C.
I will move to approve the balance of the consent agenda minus C and E.
You guys know what to do. You know when to do it.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Wake up.
All right. Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
Supervisor Kopsev.
Aye.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Sure. Item C.
Supervisor
Howe.
Yeah, I just have one question. Maybe it's a stupid one. But
never. Stupid question.
So, as I read through the resolution, it appears, or not the resolution, but the guide, it appears everything's driven towards staff and probably full-time county employees. What about, how does this policy affect, or how is it implemented with remote positions that where stipends are paid for personal equipment?
Angela Davis, County Administrator. Supervisor Howe, could you please just assist me with, are you referring to item 5E? You pulled item 5C, but I'm not sure.
I should have put my glasses on. I have 5E on my
I have my glasses on, so we're good.
That's okay. And so,
Start again.
And 5E was dropped, correct?
5E was actually removed from the agenda and will be brought back at a future date.
That my notes are incorrect.
Okay.
So we should have a motion, though, on C, which is the letter.
Yeah. Move to approve. Second. Embarrassing.
It's the holidays.
You're good.
Everything's good. It's all good.
My timer is acting up. We're going to have to use Anna's today. Supervisor Howe.
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbs.
Aye.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yes. Okay, we'll move on to item 6, public request. Item A, Altair's District 2.
Good morning, supervisors, Mr. Director, community members. I'm a project manager with Caltrans District 2. Caltrans will make every effort to ensure non-discrimination in all of its services, programs, and activities, whether they are federally funded or not, and that services and benefits are fairly distributed to all people, regardless of race, color, or national origin. Thank you for letting me present today. I'd like to show you a look ahead. I do invite you to take a map. It's much bigger than the presentation. It's a little bit easier to read. Again, I'm Catherine Lowe. I'm a structural engineer by trade. I'm the project manager for a lot of the projects in Siskiyou County. If you have a question about a project that I am not project manager for, you are welcome to reach out to me, and I will get you the answers you are seeking. Our look-ahead map shows three different phases in which our projects are in. We currently have several projects in construction. Those are indicated with the orange. We have many projects that are currently in preliminary engineering and final design. And we have several that are in planning phase. As you look at the list, I want to point out that Waiuka Rehab is on the list twice. And that is because we organize things by route. And so that project, which I will talk about more in a moment, it affects Route 3, and it also affects Route 263. And I wanted to bring your attention to the cost estimate. It's listed twice. The cost is not the sum of both lines. It is just 52.95. I wonder if that was an 8 or a 9. Thank you. A million. And then on the far right, you can see our project managers are listed. And as further down the list, when you look at the big map, it has our phone numbers. So please don't hesitate to reach out. Our public information officers do their best to get information out to the public as soon as possible. We do use a Facebook page. If you used to follow it and then recently noticed that you're no longer getting notifications, it's because we had to start a new page. Please be aware. I do recommend using Quick Maps anytime you're on the highway, and please invite your neighbors too as well, especially those new to the area. We have information on winter driving tips as well. And then if you go down to the, it's pronounced Waze alerts. If you check those, it'll tell you any accidents, traffic jams, hazards, construction, or previously approved road closures. This is a photo, the top photo is Highway 89, and the lower photo is Highway 97. We do our best to clear the roads of snow as soon as possible. I wanted to point out, when do we have an open house? We do get a lot of questions of when is there one coming up. So we recently had one for the McLeod Intersection Safety Project. It was well attended. We appreciate the community members that came out for that to discuss why this intersection requires a safety improvement. And that was held during the planning phase. So we haven't actually selected the alternative yet. It was an opportunity to engage with the community. We recently held an open house in Happy Camp that was held during the final design phase. And that was an opportunity to engage with community members who don't currently have sidewalks and don't currently have driveways. So these impacts to their businesses needed more discussion. That was very well attended. Thank you for those who attended. Back in May, we had a pre-construction workshop for the improvements on I-5. We will be doing another one for Doris because we are doing pavement improvements on 97. Once we have the contractor on board for that project, we will schedule a pre-construction meeting for that, a pre-construction workshop for that. So now I'd like to talk about Wairika Pavement and Rehabilitation. This project is a partnership between the city and Caltrans with the benefits of calming the traffic through the downtown corridor. In season one, 2022, we got a later start than we had hoped, but we were able to complete segment 7. This summer, we completed segment 1, 2, 5, and 6. And next summer, we will complete the project with segments 3 and 4 through the downtown corridor, plus the Clean California work. Plus, we have intersection closures that we've been sharing with the community for quite some time now, and that's at Moonlit Oak and Oberlin Drive. Here's some photos. I believe this is segment 1. And this is Moonlit Oak, where we did, similar to segment 1, where it is concrete pavement, as well as the on and off ramps. And this is segment 5. So next season, we'll be working in the downtown corridor. The Clean California beautification enhancements include trees, sidewalks, reducing the distance in which pedestrians have to walk to cross the road, and enhanced crosswalks. Thank you.
Okay, any questions from the board? Would you like to start, Supervisor Cossin?
Thank you. I know that everybody's excited about having the road open again and being able to drive without a lot of distraction. It was complicated. But people are talking about the smoothness of the road. Is there something that's going to happen to correct that? Are you not quite done with it?
Yeah, so we've been getting a lot of questions about that, and the answer, actually, if you drive out to Montague, you can see the grinding and paint, what's it called? It's grinding and, sorry, I'm blanking on
it's
the second
okay.
word. I want to say polishing, but I know that's not right.
Okay.
But it's the truck that it looks like it's got a vacuum attached to it, and that's to collect all the grinding material. That
so there's another process here.
There is another process yet, and as well as, thank you for bringing it up, because the traffic markings are not the permanent markings, they're just the temporary ones.
Perfect, thank you.
Anyone else?
Yeah, I was informed, I can't remember, I think it was by a fellow supervisor, about how long the Oberlin Moonlit Oaks intersection will be closed. What's the detour plan for that?
Yeah, so next season is when those will occur. And we plan to have that information available at least 3 weeks in advance.
Okay. You have anything further to that?
Yeah. So the city of Wairika attends the weekly construction meetings, and that's when those are discussed. And we do require that the contractor give us at least 3 weeks notice of what the plan is to do for traffic.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks for the meeting in McLeod. Answering questions there. Will there be another meeting in McLeod in the next stage?
I'll find out
next
and let you know. Thank you.
I know there's been a lot of discussion with the city and the public meetings at city council meetings regarding your public information getting out to the merchants along Highway 3. Has that been increased? Have you worked with the merchants better about information when there's work being done in front of their shops? Has that changed at all? Because I know there was some concern about that.
Yeah, and we've heard that the first season, and so the second season we did door-to-door knocking and engagement with the business owners.
So far, so good on the project down in the Dunsmuir on the I-5. We got through the first season. Hopefully we'll get through without much more angst, if you will. But aside from that, in the bigger picture, I see all the projects in queue, going on and then in planning and such. Knowing that the state's budget is going to be taking a hit, how do you prioritize the jobs with the funding that's available out there?
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's quite a long process. Right now, we work with our asset management team to look at our look ahead. So we're working on our 2026 programming to find out how much funding there's going to be available and what projects we can deliver.
Okay, so how does the public and or the cities or whatever get projects that they're interested in queue? How do they do that? Because it seems to me it's the other way around. Caltrans decides what the projects are.
Okay, yeah, that's a great question.
So think of it from this way. We get a lot of, hey, my pothole, my road, when's that going to get fixed, type of thing? So,
yes, definitely.
Think of it from that perspective.
Yeah, because the planning process is so lengthy, anytime I get feedback from you directly, mm-hmm. that goes into our records. Okay. And so we pull from those records when we're doing our planning. So comments that we received 3 years ago are part of our process for the 2026 program.
One of the issues that we have, that I think we have currently, although we have some media here now, is getting the word out. I mean, how do you manage to do that in the bigger scheme of things? Not everyone does social media. What are your thoughts and ideas on how we do that?
Sure. Can I go ahead and show that slide again? So we have a public information officer for Caltrans District 2. We have a website, and it's called Caltrans Near Me. And for District 2, it's kept up to date. That's your first point of reference, or I would say second. Your first point of reference, of course, is the call. So the phone number is right there, as well as the quick map tells you what's happening right now. Okay. However, under District 2, you can find projects that are coming up as well.
Okay. Your PIO is based on Reading, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other follow-up questions?
Is there a place a person can go to file complaints?
Yeah, so this phone number and email receive complaints as well.
Okay, the reason I ask is that the past 5 years, I don't know what's changed with Caltrans management, but there's a lack of timely snow plowing between Fort Jones and Aetna Highway 3.
Okay.
That at times requires a four-wheel drive to drive on Highway 3. A full clearance vehicle, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite dangerous for people that are commuting. While I frequently travel that route, and when I get to the top of Forest Mountain, there's often a snowplow sitting there and the pavement's bare. But there's no one working the valley.
Okay. I'll get back to you. Thank you.
Yeah, Michael?
I-5. At night, when it's raining, there's certain segments of the highway that you really can't tell where you're at. I know that they have those fog markers in some places, but with the new construction, and one in particular is just south of the Southweed Boulevard, going northbound. I know a lot of that's new in there, but you can't see anything when it's raining and dark in there. It's tough. So what promotes getting those sidelines and the fog markers in there, or is that just an afterthought and wait till you get a complaint?
It is not an afterthought.
Okay.
So the traffic markings are part of our projects, so the I-5 corridor projects always include those types of things when we are working on it. If we're doing emergency projects, they aren't included. So
it's current status, even though it's not marked. When will it get marked?
And can you give me that location?
Northbound, Southweed Boulevard to the bridge, the overcrossing for the railroad tracks. It's a tough spot. I drove it recently in heavy rain and dark, and I'll tell you, you couldn't tell where you were.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So,
on your first page,
the work chart that you have, it shows $612,000 to install broadband on the Highway 3 project. So is that from the beginning of the project, then work south of whole, all of Highway 3? And is that the is that just conduit, or is that the actual fiber for the middle mile through the project site?
So we have a program director for the broadband middle mile, so I will find out and get back to you.
Thank you.
Maybe we could get that broadband project manager on an agenda item, since broadband is a big issue in this county.
Sure.
So set that up for next year. Okay, any other follow-up questions?
No, I'll follow up. Yeah. Thanks for the second bite of the apple. Follow up with you. Just a little feedback from the McLeod Town Hall. They like the public table-to-table. Just in the future, we'd like to have like a formal meeting of some sort. Comments can be heard and feedback, so everybody kind of knows where they are on the same page or not, what people's ideas are.
Okay, and can I clarify, were comments received during the meeting?
They were received.
Thank you.
Just so there's just a generation of people that are used to meetings and not used to that different format.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
And then since we're talking about road issues, I know in the town of McDowell, they're on 97. There's a number of accidents there by the post office and the gas station that the local fire department has to respond to. It's a two-way street, so someone's car's turning off or car's getting on. There's a number of accidents that some are more serious in that intersection there.
Okay.
So plans to attempt to address or deal with. I've eaten enough of the apple here, so it's not good.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on to item 7A, General County Fire. We're going to donate an ambulance. Who's in charge of that? Short time.
Good morning, Supervisors. Darrell Laws, County Fire Warden and Unit Chief for CAL FIRE. So this ambulance came to us several years ago as a donation. Around that time, it was worth about $10,000. One of our local departments down the river, specifically Klamath River, used it as a rescue for many years and no longer has a need for it. So we've shopped it around to our different departments, and McLeod Community Service District would like it to use it as an ambulance and what it was originally designed for. So this is why it's been in front of you today, is to request that we reallocate this resource and donate it to McLeod Community Service District. They'll assume all costs involved with it, and it's in good working order right now, and if they can use it, it'll serve the public better there than it in the back of the yard there sitting.
Any questions from the board? Supervisor Chris?
I just support it, so unless there's any controversy, I don't think we'll need to do it. I'll make the motion for it.
One second. Appreciate it.
Okay. Supervisor Help?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobson?
Aye.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Bounsweet?
Yes. Item 7B, Assessor Recorder, Rural Evaluation Act of Funding.
And Supervisor Bounsweet, I'm recusing myself from this.
I don't think you need to recuse yourself. This is just an information that we need.
There's no action.
This is really about the whip.
Natalie Reed, County Council. I believe Supervisor Chris intended to recuse himself because he can't control what board discussion occurs after the report.
So as your direction, you might have that going to apply. Okay.
All right. Craig Kay, Assessor Recorder. With me is my ag appraiser, Julie Brown. It came to me that you had some questions regarding the whole Ag Reserve program. I made some handouts. What do I do with these handouts?
How many
are you going to get?
All of them? Okay, I can just start with some general comments. So in 1965, an interim committee of the California Assembly generated AB 2117, authorized by John Williamson. This became known as the Williamson Act, or the California Land Conservation Act, CLCA. Another term used to describe this is agricultural preserve or ag preserve, just because there's so many names, I wanted you guys to hear them all. It came out as a mechanism for protecting agricultural and open space land from premature and unnecessary urban development. It enables local governments to enter contracts with private landowners for the purpose of restricting specific parcels of land to agricultural or related open space land uses. Contracts are for 10 years and automatically renew on each anniversary date, essentially making the term indefinite. Landowners receive substantially reduced property tax assessments in return for enrollment under the Williamson Act. And then I talk a little bit about valuation. So the restricted value of ag preserve properties is derived by using many different factors. It's pretty complicated. To start with, there are 7 different soil classifications and 46 different income codes used in just Siskiyou County alone, all indicating the potential of the ground. Market rents are determined by using surveys, and capitalization rates are derived from yield rates, risk rates, tax code rates, and the annual inflation factor. The value is calculated by taking the market rent, dividing it by the capitalization rate to calculate the dollar per acre, and then, of course, that's multiplied by the number of acres in that classification. And I did attach an example that kind of shows, if you look toward the bottom of it, it shows rangeland, excessive acreage, sub-irrigated, row crops, and different things. And then toward in the middle of the top, you can see the different factors that are used to derive the actual cap rate, which you see at the bottom, which is 0.0453. So then all of these are added together, and then you add any site values and any structural improvements, fixtures, or personal property to get the total assessed value for a ag preserve property. Then the next thing that I heard that you were interested in was the valuation of non-renewal properties. So even though ag preserve properties are valued at a restricted value, we also have running in the background what's called the Prop 13 value, or the base year value, which factors up each year. They're really never taxed on that, but it's tracked throughout the life of the ownership until something changes down the road. So how it's done is that an ag preserve properties that are placed in non-renewal status are taken out of the restricted value in stages over a 9-year period. And so basically what we do, and there's a spreadsheet that gives some examples, basically you take the current Prop 13 value, or that factor base year value, you subtract the ag preserve value, and then you have a number left over. This number is multiplied by a present worth factor of 1 at 2.25% for the number of years remaining in the non-renewal period. I also have those factors attached that shows years 1 through 9 and how it comes out in the 10th. Now, the next page from the factors is the one that has color on it. It's an Excel spreadsheet. It kind of shows you, so toward the top there you see a total factor base year value of land. Then you see a HS, what stands for home site. So the home site's taken out because that's actually a Prop 13 value. Then you have a net ag value. That is all the restricted value. So you take the, then you see the restricted value is 66,604, and you subtract that from 156,672, and it leaves you 90,068. That number is what's multiplied by the present worth factor, depending on what that factor is and what year you're in, to give you a number. In this case, it was 73,722. You add that back to the restricted value, and then you add back in your home site, and then you add back in any improvements, fixtures, and personal property to get a total assessed value. In each year, as you can see by the chart of present worth factors, you're bringing back a little bit more each year of that Prop 13 value until year 10, when there is no more restricted value. It's all off the books, and then it's solely Prop 13 values. And some other stuff I thought you might be interested in would be the ag preserve contracts currently in non-renewal. There's a spreadsheet there that shows non-renewal dates of the end of 21, 22, and 23. Why aren't there any before that? Because everything before that started more than 10 years ago, and they're all completely taken care of. So this is as a result of probably the planning department starting to crack down and taking some stuff out. So this is all we have in the system right now for non-renewal. Total of 47. The last page, I know you guys always like to know the difference between the 13A values and the restricted values. So the little over $350 million would be on the roll if there was no ag preserve. The restricted values are $93,000,004, difference of $256,900. At 1%, that's a little over $2.5 million in tax dollars. The 21% to the general fund comes out to $539,617. Any questions? Because I didn't really get to hear your initial questions, but I tried my best.
Well, young lady, you can start next.
Well, oh, she's just here to help me answer your questions.
Yeah.
I got to bring the brains.
All right, let's go to the board for initial questions. Okay, so that's the current amount that we are, that's not going to the general fund, $539,000 plus. And that's down from because we've had some non-renewals. I get the whole,
yeah.
If someone's a non-renewal, every for 10 years it starts increasing to whatever the
yeah.
Next
yeah. Year. And it starts out a pretty large percent in
sure.
In year one.
Yeah. Okay. I think the initial deal, and I think this is just my initial concept of the Women's Act, you know, you said in your opening statement, it was designed for urban sprawl. You know, we don't have urban sprawl here. I accept the fact that we have contracts and I'm willing to adhere to those, but, you know, I think, you know, we also adhere, those people have to adhere to what the product, you know, the contract was. That's a significant amount to the general fund that is direly needed in this county. General fund dollars, you know, because it funds all the things that people expect. So that's where my struggle and dilemma is at this point in time. Having said that, anyone else want to weigh in, Supervisor Costa?
So I'll just piggyback on that a bit, but we need to remember that prior to Governor Schwarzenegger blue lining the Williamson Act, that 500 and whatever thousand was offset
by
subvention funding from the state of California because this was a state of California contract that counties, I guess, implemented in some form, but that was the buy-in, was the state was doing that. And then, what was it, come along, 2009-10, is that when he blue-lined it somewhere right in there?
Somewhere in there, yeah.
And so ever since then, the county is, those counties that kept the Williamson Act took that hit.
Right.
So that is coming out of what would have been the general fund at that time.
Yeah.
So, and it's why counties continue to push for Williamson Act subvention funding to return. So.
And we still do our subvention calculations every year. We still track all that.
Yeah.
So if there was a subvention fund, we'd be ready
to snag it.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm going to go down a different path for a little bit and see where if you can answer this or not. When a property is purchased that's currently under the Williamson Act and remains in the Williamson Act, does the calculations that you're providing to us move up with the increased value? So, for instance, a $500,000 property that's currently in the Williamson Act sells for $1,500,000. Does that move upwards in the tax base, or does it stay the same?
We're not talking about non-renewal. We're just talking about flat-out
Williamson Act contract.
Williamson, okay.
Yeah.
The only thing that moves up would be anything that wasn't restricted, as in structures. Maybe there's a nice home on the property.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff gets reappraised, and that value most likely would move up, especially if,
right.
You know, like you said, $1.5 million.
Right.
The land itself, if it's restricted, doesn't change value at all. That Prop 13 value I talked about in the background, certainly that goes way up
mm-hmm.
and never touched unless there was a non-renewal started. But there is no added value to the roll with regards to the restricted land itself.
So why not, I guess, is the question.
that's just not how they design. It's kind of like TPZ.
Yeah.
TPZ is so much simpler than Ag Reserve. TPZ, the state says, you have this classification, you assess this many dollars per acre, period. Nothing else.
Nothing.
But that never changes. So we get a lot of TPZ properties that sell. We don't even create a supplemental. It's just we change the name and
that's it.
And we have large dollar amount sales between timber companies.
Understood.
And we don't see an increase in any type of revenue.
And I guess my concern is that a lot of that is moving away from private ownership into corporate, a bigger corporate scheme, I'll call it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll say it, I think they should be, you know, taxed accordingly. They shouldn't be getting that free ride, I guess is where I'm going
with
that.
Right.
Because that's our county, my understanding is we have around 12% of the taxable base, of land base, out of between federal, state, and even Williamson Act and TPZ. There's only about 12% that's paying the actual property tax. Is that, fair to say?
That sounds about right, yeah.
So I guess I'm looking for, as counties continue to exist and cost of just doing county business continues to increase, there's got to be a way to reflect what a private owner comes in when he buys a house. And I know you're catching the house part of it, but mm-hmm. even if they're buying land, that 1% moves to the new value at the sale. And it's just kind of interesting that
the one thing that we do that isn't restricted, though, if there was a house on it, or as Julie explained to me yesterday, mm-hmm. maybe an extensive set of barns and mm-hmm. implement sheds and whatnot, we'll give that a site value, which is not restricted. And so there was no previous site value, or there was a previous site value, but we are increasing the site value. We will collect a little bit from that. But in the overall picture, that's not much.
And then lastly, with regard to state ownership, and I'll use the Big Springs Ranch that used to be TNC, are they still taxed? I know the state of California doesn't pay its property tax, but I was under the assumption that Cal Fish and Wildlife was paying a percentage of what they should be to local governments.
If they are, I'm not collecting it, or I'm not taxing it. The only thing I can tell you is that some of those, like those, where it zeroes it out and they're exempt, maybe they're not the government agency, but some of those that are exempt, like those different agencies, if they lease out that property to someone else, then they're taxed. Mm-hmm. They don't get the exemption if they're collecting on it. It's the ones that are sitting on it and conserving it and just letting it go wild, or whatever you want to say.
So I know, much to Director Bond's credit, he was able to produce, I think it was like $330,000 when that sale took place on that property for future offset to property tax. But it's my understanding the state of California is still paying, because I think the auditor has a roll of back taxes that go back 15 years mm-hmm. that's still owed to the county, but countywide. How is that, I guess, on new purchases like the Big Springs branch, how does that calculate out? Like you say, though, you're not getting any at this point, but yet I think they are paying something.
If they're paying something, I'm not aware of it. That would be something, an auditor function. Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'd like to know that answer too.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm going to chase the TPZ a little bit.
Okay.
Before I come back to Williamson Act. In the TPZ, upon harvest, there's a yield tax. How much of the yield tax comes back to the county?
That's a good question. And I was just brought onto the Timber Advisory Council. They have to have two or three assessors on this thing. And I just started participating in that. And we set taxes on yields, and it's... you probably know way more about it than I do, but all the different things that they have in the timber industry, but I have no idea how much is coming back to the county. That was something that was asked of us every year when we used to get those checks, and I could never figure it out, and I still haven't figured it out.
Well, I'd like to know, because it's, it is the taxable part of the income that is in place of having to do ad valorem.
Right.
On that timber, on those timber properties,
yeah.
And on the growth.
Because a long time ago, we used to have foresters on staff that went out and did their own. We had our guys do the cruises, and they were taxed at the local level, but it's all, yeah, all done at the state level now.
Well, if you could bring that back, I'd appreciate it, because mm-hmm. it should be a considerable amount of money
I would
back
think,
to the county.
Yeah.
And if it's not coming back to the county, I think we need to figure out why.
Yeah.
Something.
Okay.
Something.
Yeah, and now that I'm part of that committee, I have contacts where before I didn't have contacts, so I'll look into all that for you.
Yeah, appreciate that. I want to go to the first page of your handout here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sentence here I want to ask a question about. In the third paragraph, it says contracts for 10 years and automatically renew on each anniversary date, essentially making the term indefinite. What triggers either a non-renewal or a new contract?
A non-renewal would be either you guys triggering it or the landowner coming to the planning department
okay.
and triggering it. They don't trigger it with us.
I understand. So if a hypothetical, something recently happened, you have several families together and one waives an act and one decides not to be in the contract anymore. Is that a completely new contract or does it follow the land as this paragraph kind of implies here?
Well, over the years, it's always followed the land. And of course, that's created a problem because now you have contracts with a landowner who owned a big section, and now they've sold it off, and so the planning department is in the middle of trying to firm up those contracts so they belong to the owner of the land, even if it means where one new contract used to exist, maybe now there's going to be four contracts. And then some of those people, in talking to Bernadette, some of those people opt out of their little section, so then there's not a new contract for that.
So it's not a matter of them putting the remaining piece together and just bringing it forward as that paragraph implies. It's
yeah, if they go into non-renewal, then the countdown begins. Otherwise, it's automatically renewed each year.
Even if it's just one of five that's in the contract?
Yeah.
Okay. And then following along that theme, one of the considerable costs that some of my constituents are having to bear in that process is the title search. Can you explain to me why all of a sudden title searches are costing three times as much, and is there something a title company has to do that's different than, say, the recorder's office that could do within internally in the county?
Well, we don't do title searches, but at being the recorder, if it was a recorded document, that's where the title company's going.
Correct.
And then there are people that have non-recorded items in their possession, but I don't know why it would be three times as much now. For example, Mount Shasta Title, they purchased from us the access to everything I pretty much have access to. So
that's what I'm being told. And I'm just probing for where there's duplication of process that's unnecessary and costing constituents an important amount of money just to change the title. On a Williamson Act when one member drops out and the others want to continue.
Yeah, I know that, and we don't do it in neither one of my offices, but I know Bernadette over there in her area does quite a lot of title searching.
True.
On behalf of them as well, and I don't know that she's charging anything. I think she's just trying to make sure that...
No, it's a title company.
Yeah.
Is what my understanding
yeah.
is. And I just wondering if we're duplicating processes or whether that's something internal.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know that they're duplicating in that if we do something, we can insure it. We can't, where a title company is insuring title, and that's, it could be the increasing cost of a title company, but if they want the insurance and they want to make sure that it's right going down the road, as opposed to it all blown up in their face, then they have a title company that did it and they're insured for that. That would be the only thing I'd think of.
Yeah, I understand all that.
Yeah.
And I understand if title to the land is changing hands.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it's remained the same. We're just trying to verify.
Yeah.
And in the verification, in contract law, if you can sign a contract with false information, the contract's no good. So I'm just trying to figure out what we're doing here.
Right.
There's an internal process that's causing an awful lot of money.
as I look through some of these things, and as I get asked for, you know, particulars on a particular contract, I agree with you. It starts looking hinky.
Mm-hmm.
It's above my, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but some of it's like, wow. So I agree with you.
Okay. Coming back to Williamson Act, in my district, a number of ranches are being sold to either conservation groups or nonprofits. How are they taxed for that land that they're purchasing? And how is that different from the previous owner that may have had that property in the Williamson Act?
Are you talking about the properties that go tax exempt? Because otherwise they're just being taxed the same.
Are they tax exempt? Nonprofits?
How many of those do we have then?
Does it make sense to me?
Yeah. It.
Well, that's what I've been told.
If it's just sold to a big nonprofit, unless they're tax exempt, they're taxed exactly the same.
Pay the exact same taxes. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they're in Williamson Act and they continue to keep it in Williamson Act, then nothing changes there.
So then, if they go out of Williamson Act, or we deny that Williamson Act, then are they taxed at the Prop 13 rate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless they are on, they go through the state and they get themselves onto the exemption list, and then they file the proper paperwork and become tax exempt.
Do we have any of those?
Oh, we have a lot of those.
That's what I'm getting at.
I don't know right off the top of my head. That's I could certainly get a list. I think isn't Humanity for Horses taxes in? I think
that would be an item with well.
Well, you see, my fear here is that you know that small percentage we can tax is even being diminished even further by some of these nonprofits that are buying large tracts of land.
Yeah, and again, if they're tax exempt, like I want to say Humanity for Horses, for example, they have two major
conservancy, Wildlands Conservancy.
Yeah.
I know they're tax exempt.
Mm-hmm. But if they're leasing their land out to somebody, then I come back and I tax that land. I deny the exemption on those.
Yeah.
Those. So.
Okay.
But yeah, but you're right. As these things come in, you can see it diminish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Too many loopholes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My colleagues have dug into the nitty-gritty of all this, so I'm not going to go there, but we've spent a lot of time looking at this process, and Bernadette has spent an inordinate amount of time trying to clean up the records and will continue to do so. It keeps costing the county more and more money to maintain this program. We want to make it right. We don't want it to go away, but it still has to be cost effective for us to maintain the program. So we have to figure out how to do that. It also is important to make sure that the landowners understand what they're getting into, and it seems as though when they're buying property or have already purchased property, they don't understand what they're signing. They sign multitudes of paperwork, mountains of paperwork, when they buy property and never understand that they're signing a Williamson Act contract or that it's attached to their property. And I think that's where some of this comes from. So I think part of it is in the hands of property owners, and then when we come to them and say, oh, by the way, here's this situation you're in, they have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come back to us and say, you did this to us, and it's sorry, but you signed the paperwork.
Right.
So now we're in the process of trying to work with them and make it right, make it easy for them, but it's not necessarily our responsibility to fix a problem that they signed up for. So here we are in this really nasty situation of trying to fix something that's been going on for a really, really long time, and still make it worth our while moving forward. I think it's a really great program if it works the right way. But as time moves forward, I'm not sure that it's really in the best interest of the county to do that, considering what the state's done with us. So here we are. But I hope you can help us move forward with it as we continue to try to work through the process.
And Bernadette is